There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to NFL Live, presented by Marco's Pizza.
Ahead on NFL Live, the Cleveland Browns formally introduced their new head coach, Kevin Stefanski. He's the fourth in 5 years. We'll talk about what he needs to succeed. Stefanski's hiring means all head coaching vacancies are filled. Three first-timers, two second chances. We'll talk about what hire has intrigued us the most. And speaking of intriguing, there are some huge names at the quarterback position that could be on the move. We'll talk about who's staying and who may be headed elsewhere. Happy to have you with us, everybody, on this Tuesday afternoon.
It is Tuesday.
I know this. I'm Wendy Nix, Diana Rossini, Victor Cruz, and Matt Castle. If I'm not mistaken, your NFL Live debut.
It is my NFL
at least in these chairs.
First day.
Well, it's comfy.
It feels good.
Matt has five kids, so it will be smooth sailing. This is easier than anything else you would be doing today. That's the good news. We will start with the official news out of Cleveland. Kevin Stefanski's hired by the Browns. They announced that officially on Monday. He's 37 and spent 14 seasons as an assistant in Minnesota, but has never been a head coach at any level. His entire NFL coaching career, as I mentioned, has been with one organization, the Minnesota Vikings. Stefanski took over play calling duties on offense late in the 2018 season. Minnesota ran the ball 47% of the time with Stefanski as the play caller. That's the second highest rate in that span, trailing only the Baltimore Ravens. Stefanski was introduced at a press conference just a little while ago.
First and foremost, success starts with people. And I know we'll talk a lot about culture, but it is absolutely about the people. And everybody knows the Harry Truman quote, "It's amazing what you can accomplish when no one cares who gets the credit." And that's what I believe we have in our building. We have great people. I know we're going to add to it. We'll hire a GM here in the next week or two, and we're going to add to this culture that we're building here, and we have the right people. And, again, I just can't stress enough how excited I am to be just a part of it. You know, to use a basketball term so my dad can understand this, I want to be the point guard for this organization. I want to bring the ball up, but then I want to share the basketball and let someone else get an easy bucket. No smiling over there. I'm not going to speak anything into existence right now. I can just promise you that we're going to work. I've already spoken to a few of our players already, and that's what I'm about. I'm about working, and I'm about putting a foundation together. We will be methodical about it. We will not skip step two and three to get to four. We're going to start in the foundation, and then we're going to reinforce that foundation so that we can build upon it. And when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about schemes and technique. We'll be diligent about working with our players so that they can develop into the best versions of themselves. And ultimately, we're building a foundation for what we hope is a championship effort. We'll have a culture of accountability. We'll have structures in place. The players will understand our rules and what we're about, and we're going to be demanding, and we're going to hold each player accountable, because ultimately I know this about players. They may not come out and ask you for that, but that's what they want.
Well, perhaps the 10th time is the charm in Cleveland. Stefanski is the 10th full-time head coach the Browns have hired since returning to the league in 1999. That is the most in the league over that span. Of the previous nine, none have posted a winning record, and not a single one has lasted more than four seasons. Continuity and consistency have been a real issue in Cleveland, Victor. Certainly something they'd like to see change. Is Stefanski a step in the right direction, in your opinion?
Well, I believe he is, and I think that consistency word is important, right? Because as you put up that list of all the coaches and the coaches that they've pretty much funneled through throughout the years. Can he provide that level of stability that they've been seeking for almost year in and year out? Can he provide that for them? Now, the thing I do like about Stefanski is that he has experience with creating plays for two star receivers. And I think that's something that's going to have to translate over to the Cleveland Browns, obviously, with Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry. And having that experience, I'm sure, enticed that front office into bringing him in and understanding that they got to get the best out of these players and the best out of all their playmakers, obviously Nick Chubb included, in the backfield. Now, is he going to be a leader of men, and is he going to be able to handle the egos and the different personalities that are in that locker room? That's the biggest question that still remains to be seen.
Stefanski has interviewed with the Browns before. In fact, it's believed that he was the first choice of Paul DeBodesta several seasons ago, and it didn't work out. Matt, you spent time with him as part of that Minnesota Vikings organization. What can you tell us?
Right. He was a young quarterback coach at the time, and so when I got there, I was actually a little bit older than he was, which is an interesting dynamic. But at the same time, he's been all around that building. You know, he's an administrative assistant when he started there. Then he was a quarterback coach. He's been with the running backs. He's been with the wide receivers. So he's been in all the different elements of the offensive side of the ball. He's seen the ups and downs. He's seen how free agency can impact. So he's got a great feel. He's a great leader. He's got a presence about himself. And the other thing that I think that the Cleveland Browns were probably drawn to is a simple fact that this is a very quarterback-friendly offensive structure that he's presented. And for a guy like Baker Mayfield that had his struggles last year, and maybe he has some confidence issues, maybe not, though. Let's see, be honest with some of his press conferences.
Baker Mayfield.
But at the same time, it's a quarterback-friendly. There's a lot of play action. There's a lot of movement in the pockets, a lot of easy throws to be made, screen passes. And then there's, like you said, that balance. 47% of the time they're running the ball, there's great balance in that offensive structure. Mm-hmm. And for a young quarterback and going into his third year after some struggles, I think this was a great fit for that organization.
And going back to when they actually made this hire, people in Cleveland were telling me that it was actually his run game, because we've seen what he was able to do with Dalvin Cook and how he was able to make him a good player to really a great one. And he's a central part of that offense that we now see in Minnesota. And that was a big part of it. But in terms of now Cleveland going forward looking for a GM, the way it was explained to me is they really want these two, head coach and GM, to work as one. This is why they moved on from John Dorsey and Freddie Kitchens. They didn't feel like this was working together. So they're looking for someone that has the same vision. And the analytics department, obviously, is a crucial part of Cleveland and what they're looking for in a head coach. And I think that's why Stefanski became that lead candidate, because he's accepting of it. He wants to be part of that. And, you know, I think I saw some reports out there about how Cleveland is demanding that their head coach presents the game plan to ownership. And really, the way it's explained to me is it's not so much that they want to see the game plan. They just want everyone to be in sync, to go over, to make sure they're all on the same page headed into the game.
Well, you can't blame them. And that is something that clearly was not the case. And I think, Matt, you make a great point. It's important that somebody come in and be able to work and mold Baker Mayfield, but also be able to be the CEO and run this whole organization and have everybody else be accountable. I think Freddie Kitchens might have had one of those two things, but a lot of it went by the wayside outside the quarterback. With the hiring in Cleveland, what it does mean is that every chair on the head coaching carousel is now accounted for. The Browns were the fifth and final team to hire a new head coach in the offseason. Three of the hires, Stefanski, as we just discussed, Joe Judge with the Giants, and Matt Rhule in Carolina, are first-time NFL head coaches. The other two, quite the contrary. Mike McCarthy in Dallas, Ron Rivera in Washington. They will get a second chance, or in some cases, third or fourth. They're very established NFL head coaches. Of all the five, who intrigues you the most in their new spot?
Intrigues me is Matt Rhule. You know, I want to see what really transpires here, right? He got a 7-year, $60 million contract. That's a big commitment. I mean, we might need to think about going into coaching.
A little bit.
That's what I'm thinking.
It's not might. There's no might.
Exactly.
Victor will probably do it. Does everything else.
And I think that they're also saying that they're making a commitment to Cam Newton with the type of style and the offensive structure that they've set up. McCaffrey's there. I mean, they've got the pieces of the puzzles there. Now it's interesting to see how that that offensive structure from college translates to the NFL, which is always, I mean, there's been guys like Chip Kelly in the past, right?
Yeah.
John Harbaugh is probably the guy that's been the most successful, but that was more of a pro style offense with the most recent Kingsbury in Arizona. So Cliff Kingsbury, excuse me.
It's been a mixed bag. There's no question. Let me ask you this, just circling back to something you said. By hiring Matt Rhule, you believe this means a commitment to Cam Newton. Can you explain why?
Well, I just think that the Baylor and watching their offensive structure and the RPOs that takes place, that's run, pass options, and all the different things that they're well versed in, and that the Baylor offense has been historically very successful with in terms of that offensive structure. I just think that fits Cam Newton's game very well. And so I believe that's a statement saying, look, we want to bring somebody in here that you're going to be comfortable in this type of offensive structure and go out and be able to put yourself in a position to have success.
Makes sense. Who intrigues you?
Well, for me, it's Joe Judge and my beloved Giants.
Well, I think, yeah.
Well, I just think because going into it, once I saw the vacancy happen at the head coaching position, I was like, all right, the Giants are going to come in here and get either like a Ron Rivera type or even McCarthy and get a guy that will come in and command a presence once he walks into the building. And I think with the hiring of Joe Judge, it just left me like, okay, it felt like the same cycle almost. It felt like Coach McAdoo a couple years ago when you give a guy a shot and bring him in and see if he can transcend the coaching position, or the year after that when you bring in Pat Shurmur and you try to take a chance on another guy. It felt like we're taking another chance on another guy.
Yeah.
But granted, I must say, I loved him after the press conference. I loved everything he said. I loved his mannerisms. He literally embodied what the New York Giants football organization is all about when he stepped up there on that podium. So I say that with a little grain of salt because I love the press conference and I think he's going to bring something different than the other two coaches did in the past. But I still left me scratching my head in terms of who was out there and the type of guys that could have came in that building and commanded a presence.
Both those guys, by the way, Matt Rhule and Joe Judge, I know it's not about winning the press conference, but they did.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Rhule was, it was must-see TV.
It was River. I was at church watching that.
Matt Rhule, he spent some time with the Giants, too, so I knew all about his personality.
You know,
he does.
I think, obviously recruiting is such a big part of being a head coach in college, and you don't need to recruit, when you're in the NFL, which is why I'm in agreement with you. I think that is the most enticing matchup, or at least situation in terms of the coaches, just because you just look at history and making that jump from college to the NFL, it's not easy, and there just hasn't been a high success rate there. I think, obviously, he spent a little time with the Giants, so it's not like he's blind to the way the league is. But, to go from Baylor to where he is now, I think it's going to be a tall task.
I would agree that it's Rhule, but if I had an honorable mention, I think it would be Stefanski, just because I'm fascinated to see if there is someone, at what point is sort of that chaos reined in.
Right.
At what point does somebody get this group to fall and walk the line, if you will?
Exactly. Yeah.
And if it's him, I think they're, that's a very
got the
good
talent.
Step in the right direction.
And they're yearning for stability.
Yeah, that is stability.
That's the key word for them.
Of the new head coaches hired last year, we now know Matt LaFleur, the only one with a winning record, but he's about to play in an NFC championship.
He's a little busy.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so that's
pretty good.
He offsets the curve there.
Exactly.
NFL Live is presented by Marco's Pizza. Order America's most loved pizza today.
We're underway in the divisional round of the playoffs.
And here we go.
Devontae's got a touchdown.
Devontae wide open to the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown. Seahawks.
The Seahawks are not going away.
And he did.
The Seahawks have closed this gap.
Jimmy Graham's got it. Stumbling close to the first down.
After review of the play, the ruling of the field stands as called. First down and down.
The Green Bay Packers have advanced to the NFC Championship game.
They sure have, and the Pack will hit the road to face the 49ers in that NFC Championship game. The two will meet in Santa Clara earlier this season, or met, I should say, with the Niners cruising to a 29-point win. The third largest loss of Aaron Rodgers' career. So he'll be asked about it. Let's take a look back at when these two teams faced off. It was week 12, Packers at 49ers. Early in the first quarter, Green Bay has the ball. Aaron Rodgers, the snap, under pressure, cannot escape. It is Nick Bosa who picks it up, runs it to the two. A quick reaction by the rookie Nick Bosa, who's had an outstanding rookie year, but a rookie no more. Yes, Victor, at this point?
He is no longer a rookie when he does correct.
That's right. We've moved past that. So after that fumble, 49ers have the ball. Jimmy G hands it off to Tevin Coleman, backs into the end zone. 49ers take the early 7-0 lead. There'll be plenty where that came from as we move to the second quarter. Late in the second, San Fran with the possession. They hold the 13-0 edge. Garoppolo launches one over the middle, caught by Deebo Samuel, a 42-yard touchdown.
That was a great ball, great running catch, run after the catch by Deebo as well.
They would dominate, really, too, in the second half. 3 minutes left to play in the third quarter. Again, the 49ers have the ball, this time on the 39. They lead 23-8. Garoppolo, a wide-open George Kittle. And what a year he's had.
How does that guy get that wide open?
I was just thinking, that's not the case anymore. I feel like defense has figured that out.
37-8. Here's both coaches talking about this week.
It just seems natural that after you have your way with a team like that and then you face them just a couple months later, you kind of take it for granted. What's going to be your teaching point to the guys this week?
Don't be that stupid. That's not real. This is about Sunday's game. I mean, I can give 1,000 stories of things like that. Plenty of games from my history that I've been a part of. The game before never matters like that. There's four teams left, and there's four very, very good teams, and it's going to be a hard game for all of us.
I got to go back and watch that tape again and to really try to grasp what happened and why it happened and how can we adjust and what are we going to do to ensure that it doesn't happen? But, that'll happen over the next couple of days.
All right, look, the Packers have won 6 straight since that loss, and these two teams are playing entirely differently than they were then. But what do we take away from that game?
Well, I think the Packers were still trying to learn how to win as a team. Remember what Aaron Rodgers said after that game? He said that they didn't even take the trip serious enough. Like, he was just going off about just their team focus. And you guys both know better than anyone, traveling to the West Coast is always a challenge and it's difficult. But I think it was still early growing pains for this team. I think in terms of growth, from where the Niners were to where they are now, comparably from the Green Bay Packers to where they are now, you can say that the Green Bay Packers have grown way more.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You know, so in terms of where they're at compared to where they are now, I think it's going to be a completely different matchup.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a different matchup than this one. Look, I think, you know, every week is different in the NFL. Sometimes it's just not your day and it's just not your week. And I think that's what happened with this team. I think the Niners just pinned their ears back and got after Aaron Rodgers and sacked him 5 times in that game. And that was the storyline of that game. But I think the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are playing different football now. And obviously in the playoffs, it's a clean slate. Everybody has an even playing field, and every man brings their best to that football field on that day, and we'll see who the best man wins. I think the Green Bay Packers are going to be a different type of football team. I think Matt LaFleur is going to have different schemes in place to get Aaron Rodgers out of the pocket. A lot of those plays you saw was just him dropping back, and it's proven that you cannot do that against the 49ers because Nick Bosa and all those guys will come after you down after down, and they're going to have some things to get him out of the pocket, get him out of there to throw the ball downfield and make big plays down the field.
Let me ask you, Matt, about Garoppolo in particular, if I might. What did we learn from last week if you saw that game? And what have we learned since that game against Green Bay about Jimmy Garoppolo?
Right. I think everybody asks, you know, is he going to be the guy that can step up in the big moments and the big games and playoffs? Because that's what you get paid to do, especially as being the face of the franchise. And so I don't think it answered any of those major questions. They relied heavily on the run game. Mm-hmm. The defense was absolutely dominant, much as they've been all throughout the course of the year. They got healthier on the defensive side. Dee Ford came back. They held the Minnesota Vikings to 7 first downs all game. They sacked Kirk Cousins 6 times. They had maybe a total of 100 yards total at the end of the third quarter. So that's a dominant performance by the defensive ball side of the ball. And then at the same time, they relied heavily on the run game, which they did. And Garoppolo made some good throws. He also had the one mistake to Kendricks with
two. He got lucky.
He got lucky on the second one. Exactly.
It's like he's still looking to throw those picks.
He's still looking. Now,
and you can see you can see Kyle's holding him back. Not exactly holding him back, but there's still growth there to be had. I think
there's no doubt.
Getting tested in the big moments still needs to happen.
Now, I'd say this. In the regular season game, when there was a big game against the New Orleans Saints, which was a good team this football year, Jimmy Garoppolo put that team on his back. They won 48-46, I believe it was. He was 26 for 35 for 349 with 4 TDs and only 1 interception. So he has the ability. There's no doubt about that. This kid is physically talented. He sees the field well. He's in a great system with Kyle Shanahan. He has weapons around himself. And the fact of the matter is, it's whether or not that team puts him in a position to where he has to be that guy that goes and puts him on the back. But right now, the way that they're playing defense in the run game,
they don't have to.
I
think that New Orleans game is a great point. I mean,
I
you
agree.
Can point to that and say, okay, that is a time where he sort of took it upon himself and got
yeah.
this done.
No,
yeah, going into that game, you knew he was going to have to score some points. That offense was going to have to score some points in order to compete and hang in there with the New Orleans Saints. And Jimmy G did that. He made those throws. He made those big plays.
Again, you could argue perhaps that game helped exactly. Green Bay, at least, if nothing else, to see what they might be up against. But again, they've rattled off six straight wins since that point. Well, the Bengals are officially on the clock, and they probably liked what they saw in last night's national championship game. Cincinnati will get the first crack at LSU quarterback Joe Burrow, with Ohio State edge rusher Chase Young currently expected to go number two to the Redskins. Is there any scenario, and I almost hesitate to phrase it like that because there's always a scenario, but in what case can you see a situation where Joe Burrow isn't the first overall pick in the draft?
I don't see any possibility
okay.
that I think Cincinnati is absolutely going to take Joe Burrow number one. I mean, he fits the mold of what that organization needs. And they've got so many pieces of the puzzle in together with Tyler Boyd. And then they've got John Ross and Tyler Eifert mm-hmm. and Joe Mixon in the backfield. I mean, it's incredible the talent that they have there. But now they need the guy to go out and pull the trigger. And for a young coach that just came in who struggled last year, it'll be a great opportunity to draft somebody who will be the stability there and for your franchise for a long time to come.
And hopefully it entices A.J. Green to come back to Cincinnati, right? I mean, they're going to have themselves a fantastic quarterback that can get them the football, that is confident in the pocket, that can do all those intangible things, that can move around with his legs as well. Very cerebral quarterback that understands coverages and where to go with the football and stands in that pocket. I think Cincinnati is going to have themselves a phenomenal quarterback in Joe Burrow.
Which reminded me of the A.J. Green situation. Definitely the weirdest situation all
very
season
weird.
Long.
No.
Yeah, we're
going to
talk a little bit more about that.
I'm going to play. I'm not going to play.
Like, what are we doing here?
All
here's my only concern about doing this. Like, all right, he's definitely going number one. I feel like every year during this time, we start making all these predictions. And so much happens between now and the draft. There are so many practices. There's so much film to be watched by these organizations. We've got the combine, separate workouts. Look at Baker Mayfield. He wasn't projected to go number one when he went number one. That wasn't the quarterback that we were talking about. So while it looks so obvious at this point right now, especially coming off, you know, such a tremendous season and an electric night in Louisiana last night, I still think there's a lot of time between now and the draft. So I'm going to hold
on. I don't see it. The dude threw 60 touchdown 60. Passes. I don't 60. See a scenario.
Here's an effect on five last night.
Let's be clear.
We record these
and
shows,
you know,
so we'll come back in
worry.
April. And,
can't wait.
You know.
But you also know that he's not going to work out. Like, he's not going to run at the combine.
Right.
He's not going to, hey, guys,
chilling.
Right
Roof
there.
Is
all
the
right.
See
you in Cincinnati.
Roof is in the tape on.
Yeah.
See you
in
Cincinnati.
I will say this, and it's not a situation where it will change between now and the draft, but certainly a lot's changed for Tua Tagovailoa from this time last year when you talk about injuries in the hip. And it's interesting to talk about where he may end up, Matt, because we just don't know a lot about his health, and we won't know a lot about his health, really, until the draft or shortly thereafter.
Right, and that's the scary part for any organization is to invest in the first round, a guy that needs to come in and usually be able to step right in and play. And so for somebody to go through that type of injury and you really don't know where the rehab's going to take you, when he's going to be available, are you going to even be able to evaluate his progress and how he's throwing, and are you going to be able to really look at him and evaluate him from that standpoint? So it'll be interesting. If a team does take him early, I think it's got to be a team that has somebody already in place that can be a bridge guy, that can be there, that can take the reps and can hold down the fort. A guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, for instance, in Miami, who can play a little bit as he might still be recovering from this injury. And then the other thing is every organization is going to go around and poke and prod and evaluate, because it's not just the hip with him. He's also had multiple ankle injuries as well throughout his short college career.
I have a theory. This is my prediction.
Yes. More theories from Diana Racine. Love it.
Joe Burrow's not going anywhere. this is a type of guy I feel like that could fall to the New England Patriots, right? Mm. Let's just say, Tom Brady decides to come back for one more year, and all these teams pass on Tua because of this injury, and they're the Patriots late in the draft, able to get a quarterback who maybe after another year of resting, health, learning behind Tom Brady, then can
take over and become the starting quarterback in New England.
That's not a terrible. That's not terrible.
No, that's not like a. Do you always make judgments on like this? That was good. This is bad. This is good.
There's a strong pipeline with Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, as you know. And but I think that's a very valid point that whether it be in New England or anywhere else, you will need a situation, I think, where you don't need a starting quarterback to step in day one.
Yeah.
Because you will not have the assurance that's possible with Tua.
Yeah, I agree. And the biggest thing, and you hit it right on the nose, is the poking and prodding that goes on in the NFL during that combine and during that entire process leading up to the draft. What's he going to look like? What are these private workouts going to look like? How is he in terms of, you know, him health-wise? What is he going to look like? We don't know. That still remains to be seen. Will he have that same explosiveness? Will he be able to throw the same? Will he have that same power coming from his legs, given that hip injury? Still remains to be seen. But there is a team out there that's going to take a chance on him, whether they go high in the first round, second round, third, wherever he goes, a team will pick him up and will it'll have to be a team that has a steady quarterback situation that can stand the test of time, like Fitzmagic. I don't know how Fitzmagic just continues to live on here.
It's magic, baby.
He's living on here, man. But I think if he goes to the right situation, it could pay dividends for a team down the road.
All right, obviously you can find a quarterback in the draft. There's also the free agent option. And wow, what a year it will be, we think, for quarterback free agents. ESPN.com released its early list of the top 50 free agents, and three quarterbacks lead the way. It's fascinating that these names are on there. Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees. Eight quarterbacks make the cut overall, including two on both the Saints and Titans. Free agency, by the way, officially opens its doors on March 18th. So as we look at the list of these top quarterbacks on the market, we will take our pick, same team or new team, because it's got to be one of the two, right? We're not going to say which new team, but it's either the same or it's not.
Okay.
So Dak Prescott, Matt, same, or does he return to the Dallas Cowboys?
Oh, he's definitely returning to the Dallas Cowboys.
Not letting him walk out
tap,
that door.
Tap.
There you go.
Slide.
No,
tap,
just tap again.
Boom. First time, guys.
Everybody. Got it.
No, I think that will definitely be back with the Cowboys. However, I do think it's going to be a process. They tried to get a deal done before the season. They weren't able to do that. I think that the tag is an option here. But in the long run, if they do tag him, I think they will work out a long-term deal.
It just, you never know. But it's hard to envision a scenario where Dak Prescott is not with the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones knows what the alternatives are and knows these quarterbacks don't grow on trees, so to speak. Tom Brady
Mr. Cruz. Me. Okay, I'm just going to make a quick decision. Quick tap and tap. I'm thinking he stays with the New England Patriots. Look, I just think his relationship with that front office, with Mr. Kraft, I think that's going to supersede anything. They're going to give him a deal for as long as he wants to be there, 1 year, 2 years. It'll be a short deal, but it'll be a deal that I think he's going to name the time where he wants to retire. He wants to leave the game. But I think he stays. I think he's still playing at a high level. I mean, his team did make the playoffs. I know the Patriots not being in Super Bowl contention is always, you know, weird for people to see, especially at this time of the year. But I think he still has some things left untold in New England, and he wants to finish.
He says he has something to prove still. Listen, no, I don't even think they caught the pick six when I thought, he'll be back. He'll be back. No way. No way are we going out on that note.
Exactly.
All right, from one first ballot Hall of Famer to another, Drew Brees in New Orleans, also a free agent.
Well, Wendy, it took me a year to get New Orleans fans to like me again after I said that the Falcons were going to win the division, so I'm not going to mess with them again. So Drew Brees, same team. I think Brees and the Saints organization, they love to do this little dance of playing hard to get. Oh, you know, maybe I'll go see what's out there. Maybe I want to move on. We know Drew Brees is synonymous with New Orleans and the Saints and Sean Payton. And I think no matter what goes down, Drew Brees has way more football left in him. Sean Payton knows he does. As much as he loves Taysom Hill and he believes he's a starter, Drew Brees is the starter for the New Orleans Saints.
All right. Talk about somebody who's earned a contract somewhere. Probably the best coaching decision of the year, Mike Vrabel, when he moved to Ryan Tannehill. But what about Tannehill?
And that decision will pay dividends for Tannehill because he's going to get a pretty huge contract with the Tennessee Titans because of what he's done. I think he proved that he can make those tight throws in windows that were really, really small. I think he proved that he can lead that team to victory. I think he proved that he can make all the necessary throws. And what else do you need to see from a quarterback than him making those throws in pressure situations and putting the team on his back at times in those pressure third downs and making big plays and obviously having Derrick Henry in the back?
I think the question there, though, will be, are they going to give him a contract or a franchise tag him?
Right?
Because they're going to have that option.
He's not going anywhere. No, he's not going anywhere.
Exactly.
All right, Mr. Castle, how about Philip Rivers?
All right, Philip Rivers. There's a lot of question marks. No, I'm going to go new team. Thank you very much. A little bit of new team.
Veteran move.
Now, look, we got Tyrod Taylor still with the Chargers, which he's a guy that has won some games in the NFL, obviously took the Buffalo Bills to the playoffs a few years back. He's a guy that can bridge it. I think that they want to go younger at the position. And at the same time, Phillip Rivers still has some go in him. He can still play the game. He wants to play the game. I'm going to throw out a crazy scenario. Okay. Derek Carr in Oakland. And there's been some grumblings about Gruden and Derek Carr. There's a potential. Gruden loves older quarterbacks. Mm. So there might be still kind of on the West Coast. A lot of kids. I get it. I've got five. Hey, you never know. You never know.
Yeah.
But Phillip Rivers is at a new team next year.
Only issue, of course, is that Oakland's moving to Las Vegas. Yeah. But you know what? We won't let that get in the way.
No biggie. That's
bring the kids. Hang out on the
kids.
Hang out
on the strip.
Hey.
There's no place family friendly like
Circus. Circus. The Chargers have a pretty early first round pick, too. They could trade up and get themselves a quarterback.
It makes sense, especially when you talk about the pairing with John Gruden. All right, who's got Jameis?
I'll take Jameis. Jameis, to me, is the biggest anomaly. The guy's got 30-plus touchdowns and 30 picks, 30 for 30. What do you do with him? And I think he stays with the same team under a franchise tag, though.
Really?
Just so they can have the wherewithal to make the change and go to a different quarterback if need be, because they've seen what they've seen from Jameis Winston. They know him. They know what he brings to the table. They understand what type of player he is. Yes, he makes great throws and can get guys in position and has those touchdown passes, but he also has some issues with turnovers and decision-making. So, obviously, they have some decisions to make in regards to Jameis Winston, but I think they tag him and he stays with the team.
Turnovers are true.
I'm going to go Marcus, different team.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Everything I hear about Marcus in Tennessee and how he's handled going from being the starter to the backup has been seamless. Apparently, he's been extremely supportive of Ryan Tannehill. He's run scout team really well, especially last week as they prepared for Lamar Jackson, the Baltimore Ravens. Everyone there was just, singing him the praises of how great Marcus has been. And I think this experience in Tennessee is going to do nothing but grow him. So I don't think his time being a player, of course, is over. I just think his time in Tennessee is over.
And I think sometimes a player just needs a different team.
Environment. Sometimes you can make a difference.
Absolutely, 100%.
Take us home with Teddy Bridgewater.
All right, Teddy. Teddy Bridgewater. I believe he's going to be staying.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Do I reset it?
Okay, Teddy, you're going over here.
We know.
Yeah, we got it. The reason is there's still some uncertainty about Drew Brees coming back, And with that all being said, we know Sean Payton has a lot of faith in this guy. He won 6 games for him this year and stepped in, did a remarkable job. And I don't think that the organization is going to let go of a guy like that. I think that they sign him to maybe a shorter, bigger contract, but also one that's going to make him feel secure and feel good about the prospect of coming back to the Saints and rather than hitting free agency.
I think you're crazy. I think financially they can't handle it. They can't keep all three of them, and Sean Payton is not getting rid of Taysom Hill, right?
Well,
he plays 55 positions, including coach. So they're going to keep him on the team, and I think they work it out with Drew Brees. So I think Teddy's going to hit the market.
What's fascinating is that even going through this exercise, the names that are on this list and the offseason. And by the way, we know the ripple effect, the repercussions that some of these decisions will have on other decisions is really going to be interesting to watch. It's also the time of year, by the way, that we have retirements in the NFL as one season closes and we look toward another. And so new on NFL Live this afternoon, courtesy of our Adam Schefter, Antonio Gates, one of the most prolific players to compete in the National Football League, announced his retirement today.
Thank you for everything, Amy.
Thank you, Antonio. And congratulations. Job well done, by the way, but that's just the first job.
Exactly.
Up next, there's no doubt a bright future for Antonio Gates. The Chiefs and Titans are coming off stunning wins over the weekend. Tennessee upset the top-seeded Ravens. Kansas City stormed back from a 24-point deficit. The two teams will also meet for the second time this year after playing a thriller in Nashville that was back in Week 10. And just like we did with the 49ers and the Packers, we'll take a look back. Derrick Henry, the Titans, that's the league's leading rusher, hosting the Chiefs. Third quarter, Titans trailing 19-13. Ryan Tannehill hands it off. And that's all you have to do with this team these days. Titans take a 1-point lead.
That is a large man.
Oh, he's
coming through, shedding blockers, and with the speed to just finish it off, too. It's incredible.
It's just incredible to see a big guy move like that. Chiefs now up 22-20, 3rd and 9 from their own 37. Mahomes steps up in the pocket, delivers.
Are you kidding me right now?
This is exactly what they're going to do. It's going to be a track meet.
Oh, my goodness.
But this is Mahomes' first game back from injury, remember?
That's right. From the knee injury after missing
four games.
A $1.27 left now. Chiefs up 32-27. And here comes the 47-yard field goal attempt. But there's a panic here.
Bad snap.
And the bad snap, so they throw it away. And, of course, that's going to get you intentional grounding, which, in fact, it did. It's a tough break for the Chiefs. Titans with a chance to steal this one. First and 10 from the Chiefs 23. Tannehill to Adam Humphries, the go-ahead strike.
Great ball down the middle. Tannehill proving that he can make the throws as soon as he got in the game. Love it.
He was fired up, rightly so. And then Mahomes, again, first game back from missing with the knee injury. 17 seconds to play, possibly the game. He hits DeMarcus Robinson for a gain of 23. And here come the Chiefs. They have an opportunity. And this for the game-tying 52-yard field goal by Butker. But, yep, tough day. Blocked. A huge special teams play for Tennessee.
That's Tennessee in a nutshell right there.
Big time.
That's exactly how they play.
Big time play.
Mike Vrabel fired up. Titans win it. And here is the rematch this weekend in Arrowhead.
You know, I think the thing that I appreciate the most about watching Andy and their offensive players is that I know what the diagram in the book looks like, and a lot of those routes and plays don't really look like those diagrams.
They're strong. They're well coached. Mike does a nice job with them. And, you know, that running back's not a bad player. He brings it every snap. He's a big fella that can really move. So all the way around, it's a well-deserved team to be in this position.
All right, we're going to give Andy Reid the Understatement of the Year award. He's not a bad player, that Derrick Henry. In fact, anything. But what's the answer there, Matt, in terms of stopping or at least containing Derrick Henry?
Well, he's a physically punishing runner, you know. And when you watch him run, the most impressive part to me is his yards after contact. When he initially gets contacted at the line of scrimmage or he gets hit, and then his explosiveness, as you just saw right there, guys are trying to hit him, take him. You can't tackle this guy with just one guy. You've got to do it with multiple people. You got to gang tackle because he comes downhill. And then when he gets in the open field, the other thing for a big guy as big as he is, he's got an explosiveness that he can hit the next level and he can roll out. And as you saw even in the Baltimore game last week, he gets hit in the backfield, bounces off the guy, a defensive lineman, and runs for 66 yards and then a scoot. So he's just incredibly talented. He's big. He's physical. And this offensive line, everybody's involved, but the offensive line in particular should get a lot of credit for what's going on.
Well, the good news if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, I mean, they don't have Derrick Henry, but it's not as if they have any kind of shortage of weapons.
Yeah.
That's not the case at all.
I think that's the difference. So I think the Tennessee Titans defense is much better than what we saw Houston do. They obviously struggled containing Patrick Mahomes the entire game, and their game plan just, you know, didn't turn out to be what it was. But I think in this matchup, in terms of what Henry's been able to do, I mean, I look at it like this. They've slayed two big dragons, right? The Patriots and the Ravens. I don't think anyone expected them to do that. Why not a third? And that's their attitude.
Like
and
their goal should be their attitude.
And they're on the road. Road warriors. They've proven it.
And they knew that going into it. As soon as they won in Houston, you know, week 17 to get into the wild card, they knew they were going to be on the road for the rest of the tournament, knowing that they are not the best team out on the field.
Yeah.
And time and time again, we're seeing that they're proving everybody wrong.
Is it a little surreal for you, Matt, to know? I mean, this is a guy you were obviously when you were traded. He went along. You were traded together to Kansas City. Fun fact, I got sent there when you guys got traded, busted up my knee in Charlotte, got stitches, made it to Kansas.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I always remember
stitches.
The day. Yes. I had to get hauled in, but I was there.
See, you were there.
You were there. You and Vrabel were traded together on the same day.
Yes. And I remember it. And of course, you've thrown a pass. I remember eligible receiver, Mike Vrabel.
Mike Vrabel.
So
he does
it
all.
Well.
I know
here
him really well. Oh, here it is.
Everybody in the stadium knew
the rock.
To him when they would announce that.
Oh, he took a lot of pride in that, too. He'd come over during the offensive drills and come over and say, but when are we doing goal line? When are we doing goal line? This one, he yelled
he
at me for
New
throwing
England.
It too hard at him right there. He was so mad at me, but he was fired up. Look at him.
Is it funny now to think that not only is he a head coach, but he's about to lead his team into a championship game?
You know, you always hear that sometimes teams will take on the personality of their head coach, and this team definitely has. I mean, they're tough, they're smart, they're fundamentally sound. Mike Vrabel as a player was always tough. He was always smart, and he was a technician in terms of hand placement and all those things, but he also was an extra coach on the field that guys always respond to. He's a natural leader. This guy can motivate, and he's got sometimes off-color ways of saying, like, and motivating you, but at the same time, you know what? It doesn't surprise me that this team's having success. He's got a pulse of this team. I know that the guys respect him. They also know that he's been in this position before. So what he speaks is truth, and he understands the position that they're in. He understands where they're at, and now it's just about going out and taking it.
Yeah, he doesn't suffer fools either. You knew as a reporter, you better not come in with some lame question.
Or he'll give it to you.
He would 100% let you know, so you better be prepared, which is fair enough. Aaron Jones enjoyed a massive breakout in year three. His 19 touchdowns tied for the second most in Packers history. Jones also put up more scrimmage yards than he did in his first two seasons combined, while nearly matching his rushing total as well. And you know what? There is another Aaron in Green Bay. He's had a pretty good career as well, including a Super Bowl ring. But here's the thing. He was on the Levitard show earlier today, and apparently that Super Bowl win, not one of his top two personal achievements.
Really?
Mr. Wonderful.
Where does that rank in terms of your achievements? Like, it felt pretty good, right? I understand that winning football games feels pretty good, but it had to feel pretty good to win at Jeopardy, like to beat a Shark Tank guy and to end up beating an astronaut.
Yeah, probably number two highlight of my life. Number one was the only time I've dunked on somebody. There's just not another feeling on a 10-foot hoop, by the way, of actually dunking on someone. It was a pickup basketball game when I was in, I think I was 19. So that's number one. Jeopardy two.
he peaked. First of all, the Super Bowl win's not on the top of the list, and he peaked at 19. It hasn't gotten any better than that.
I've dunked on someone in my life, Wendy. It's a pretty good feeling.
Really? But is it like
never
his
been
daughter?
There.
The best
never
feeling?
Dunked my daughter.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's not better.
It's not better than A, the birth of my child, and B, the Super Bowl win. It's definitely
He doesn't have kids, so we'll give him that one.
Okay, we'll give him that.
But the Super Bowl win, you put it above the dunk?
100%.
You ever dunked on anybody?
No, absolutely
You're
not.
Tall.
I mean, I've got concrete in my feet. I mean, I try to jump.
Could you play baseball?
I can do as many like all the different workouts and everything to get you more explosive. That's not happening.
Okay, all right.
It's not happening.
Well, I'm sorry that you won't ever know the greatest feeling. Apparently, on
I can jump on a trampoline. I can jump on a trampoline.
Oh, well, you are dying. I'm sorry. Did you dunk on anybody?
I was an all-state basketball player in New Jersey.
But did you dunk? What's the answer? Yes or no? No,
I didn't dunk. I'm like the mini one.
And then there's this. This is a great feeling, too, I think, if you're Chad Johnson anyway. New on NFL Live, the opportunity to kick in the XFL presented itself.
Come on down.
Try out Monday in Houston.
Yes.
I'm excited as hell, and I'm sure it will all go well.
Interesting.
He did kick an extra point in a preseason game for the Bengals.
I need Chad to start doing some TV, though. I think he's his perspective, the way he speaks, his mind, I think he's built for TV. Just don't come take my job.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Why don't you come to the XFL?
Here's the good news. Got a lot of good news today, but here's some of it. Today's guest analyst, Mr. Matt Castle, has spent time in a lot of different places throughout his time at USC and then seven different NFL teams. He's played with Tom Brady, Tony Romo, Carson Palmer, and Matthew Stafford, the one we're going to talk about. I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count.
Okay.
Okay. As we play a little panic or patience regarding one Tom Brady, not on Tom Brady, there's no need to panic there, but on his immediate future, Matt, in New England.
I'm going to go with patience here.
I think that nice music with
Patriots
that.
Nation need to be a little bit more patient. I mean, the fact of the matter is he's had a great relationship with Mr. Kraft throughout his career. For 20-some-odd years, he's been the man in that organization. He is the GOAT. And now there's further incentive to come back, I would believe, in the simple fact that Josh McDaniels did not get hired as a head coach.
Do you believe that will make a difference for Tom?
I think it will, because when you start over with a new offensive coordinator, even at this stage in your career, you have to get to know each other. There wasn't anybody inside that building that was really in the mold to be brought up and put into that position. So you might have to bring somebody in from outside that building. And sometimes, you know, it takes some time to get that continuity that you need with a play caller to know and feel comfortable. So it's that, but then I also think that they need to go out and invest. They got to get a number one receiver for him. They've got to go out and get some depth at the tight end position. There's been some issues with James Devlin this year. It went on IR. Isaiah Wynn got hurt. There's a multitude of things that went on this season that as as a result, I mean, came out and his numbers weren't as good as they've been in the past. But I do think he'll be back with the Patriots.
I would think if I'm Tom, that's going to be part of the conversation. You know, what else are you going to do? What pieces are you willing to put in place around me if I come back?
They definitely have to bring in some pieces, some playmakers. That's why they brought guys like Antonio Brown in earlier on in the season, because they needed help and more pass catchers and playmakers at certain positions. But I think New England, that entire fan base, is panicking. Until this gets signed,
they
get there, they are indeed panicking.
Yeah.
Until Tom Brady shows up in that uniform again in the beginning of August for training camp, then they'll be calm, and then you can play that nice, soft, calming music. That was good.
It was good. We got both.
Got to get back to that.
Serenity.
All right, serenity now. I'm not going to ask about panicking on Matt Stafford, but about Matt Stafford's opportunity to win a Super Bowl.
Right. I mean, if you're going one or the other, I've got to push the panic button on this one. And again, I think Matthew Stafford doesn't. Matthew Stafford is one of the most talented, if not the most talented quarterback that I've ever been around. His football IQ is through the roof, everything else. But within that organization and the turmoil that's kind of taken place and just the history of winning and that division in it within itself is a tough division to play in. You got the Minnesota Vikings, the Chicago Bears, Green Bay Packers. All those teams are playing at high levels. And so week in and week out to win that division is tough, let alone to go through the playoffs and be victorious and also go to the Super Bowl and win.
All right, one more for you. Marcus Mariota becoming a starting quarterback again.
Mm. Right. A lot of people would push panic, but I'm pushing patience on this.
Okay,
I was with him 16 and 17. The first year I came, it was his second year in the league, and he threw 26 touchdowns, 9 interceptions before breaking his leg. He's had a tremendous amount of injuries throughout his career that has hindered his ability to be on the field at all times, but at the same time, he's tough, he's smart, he throws the football very well, and somebody's going to pick him up, and if you're looking for a dynamic quarterback with versatility, he's a guy that can provide that.
I just think Mariota needs a change of scenery.
Yeah.
Just somewhere new, get him out of that. I kind of feel like there's this cloud over him of pressure to be, you know, successful in Tennessee, and I just think a change of scenery will be extremely beneficial for him, but I agree with Matt, you got to have some patience with him.
I agree about the change of scenery, though, as well. And by all accounts, the fact that he's handled this so well, it makes you want to see him get another chance.
True professional.
And another opportunity to sort of see what happens.
That's the type of person he is. I mean, he is honestly an outstanding person and a great professional.
All right, Matt, well done.
All right.
We're not panicking on you.
Panicking.
Not by a long shot.
In celebration of the NFL's 100th season, we look back at this date in NFL history. January 14th of 1973. The Dolphins completed the only perfect season in NFL history. They beat the Redskins in Super Bowl VII to finish the 72 season 17-0.
We really didn't think about the perfect season. We thought our whole emphasis, our whole goal was to win the Super Bowl.
Bob Greasy's 28-yard touchdown pass to Howard Twilley in the first quarter gave Miami the lead. They never relinquished it. The only time Washington scored was on a fumble return in the fourth quarter after kicker Gerald Yepremian's field goal was blocked. Dolphins safety Jake Scott had 2 interceptions, and he was named the game's MVP.
The 70th annual Pro Bowl is on Sunday, January 26th, coming right up, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific from Orlando. AFC facing the NFC on ESPN and ABC, plus the 4th annual Pro Bowl Skills Showdown, Thursday, January 23rd. That's at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. As we mentioned earlier, he is the Vikings offensive coordinator no more. In fact, he's the new head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland officially introduced Kevin Stefanski earlier today. He spent 14 seasons as an assistant in Minnesota, and this will be his first head coaching job at any level. Here he is with Jake Trotter.
Kevin, your thoughts on coaching quarterback Baker Mayfield, and where do you think that you'll be able to help him?
I think he's a supremely talented player. I think you've seen his skill set over the last couple of years and what he's capable of. Nobody's as accurate as he is. So I think there's so many tools with Baker, his athleticism. So I'm eager to get to work with him. I can already imagine some of the schemes that we can run with him. But at the end of the day, the kid is supremely talented, and it's just a matter of us putting the right pieces around him.
In addition to Baker, what is the potential of this offense, especially with so many big names?
Yeah, I think it's so important for us to be able to be multiple. You have to have good players. It's one thing to be multiple and you don't have good players. Well, I think we do. And I think we have tight ends, we have receivers, we have running backs. So that allows us to do different things schematically. We don't have to be in one personnel group the whole game. We can kind of make sure that we got all of our best players out there on the field.
There's been a lot of talk in Cleveland lately about analytics. What do analytics mean to you as a coach and how you might employ them on the field?
Yeah, analytics to me is just information. It's statistics. It's information. When you're making a decision, you like to be totally informed. And I think that's what we're trying to drive towards. I will say this. That's in a lot of buildings in the NFL. And I know that we have a pretty special department here. So I'm looking forward to working with those guys. And I think it's going to be pretty cool.
I'm sure you're aware of this. Browns have not been in the playoffs since 2002. Longest drought in the NFL. What is going to be the key to finally turning that around?
Work. We got to make sure that our guys come back into that building and are ready to get to work. And me telling you that we're going to do X, Y, or Z is not going to get it done. We just got to buckle down and get to work.
Thanks, Kevin.
That's new Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski. Keep in mind, John Dorsey is gone, so Cleveland will also look for a GM in the near term, one they believe now will need to work in step with Stefanski. So Jimmy Haslam, the owner, also spoke today, and he was asked about his ability or his willingness to intervene and be involved with his head coach. Here was his answer.
There's some rumors out there, reports out there. First off, that Kevin's going to have to meet with you on Mondays after the game. Is there truth to that one?
Well, let me ask you, if you owned a pro football team, would you meet with the head coach Monday after the game? Of course you would. I mean, of course we would. The rumors out there, though, about presenting the game plan and those kind are just totally inaccurate, and I really think they're irresponsible.
Well, look, we talked about this earlier when we touched on Stefanski. Consistency and stability, these are things that have not been in Cleveland that must be in Cleveland in order for the success to follow. So, look, I mean, I hear him. The level to which he's going to be involved, I don't know, Diana, but What I do know is whoever's there needs to be on the same page.
It sounds like whoever put out that information about ownership needing to go over game plan, it sounds just like spilt milk. It sounds like sour grapes of somebody who didn't get the job and is trying to say, I didn't get the job because I don't want to present the game plan to the owner. First of all, what owner is even going to go through the game plan and even understand it? I mean, not taking away credit from owners. I'm sure they know a lot about football, but if they don't even speak the same language, what are you going to talk about there? I think this is just about synergy. Mm-hmm. This is what the Cleveland Browns are looking for. And I'm in support of that. I think that's a good idea. I think all the departments should be working together, going over the game plan as one. So I don't think it's as, out of the ordinary to do that. In fact, I think it's smart.
You know what? The word that comes to mind when you talk about Cleveland over the last at least 5 years or so is factions,
right?
Factions. You've seen that. We saw it on Hard Knocks. You've seen it. This group and that group and I'm against you.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work. And so to that end, do what you have to do to get on the same.
The big thing with Stefanski is he has to go into this job not looking over his shoulder and not looking to get fired at the end of the year. He has to look with the stability. He has to be given that stability to be the coach and to take some chances and to not be, ridiculed for a mistake he may make here and there. He has to feel that stability, and that only comes from the top down.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that's if that comes to fruition here in Cleveland.
Well, no player can play tight, right? You can't have a coach coaching tight either.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you know what? It's just ownership. They want to be a part of it. You know what I mean? And I don't think I've been with other organizations, even Clark Hunt in Kansas City. I remember that Todd Haley used to go meet with him after games and Scott Pioli.
Yeah.
And that's a normal thing that organizations knew. Now, the playbook, that's a little far-fetched.
Yeah, right.
I think
nobody would argue Clark Hunt wasn't a great owner and a great steward to this game.
Right. I think Coach Stefanski, as players are going to start saying, he's going to do a great job there. And he's got all the tools and all the football IQ to get it done.
Well, and so it begins. It's a new season, a new era in Cleveland. We say that a lot, but anyway, it's true. All right, Hat Tuesday. We're going to get right to it. The quarterback, new head coach, quarterback combo. You're all in on Diana.
Ooh. All right, I am going to go with the Washington Redskins, Ron Rivera, and Dwayne Haskins. I think that Haskins just needs a fresh new change there. Obviously, with a new head coach, Ron Rivera knows how to win. I think he's great for the young quarterback.
Matt Castle?
All right, you guys, this is probably one of the only teams I haven't been on in the NFL.
He's gonna
I'm going with the Browns! Go Stefanski and Baker Mayfield. Let's go, boys. Balanced right. attack. Rip it around.
Good luck taking that thing off, buddy.
Oh, man, it hurts so bad.
I like my veteran head coach, Dak. I know I'm jumping in line. I'm getting ahead of you. But I think the year off for McCarthy will prove to serve him well in terms of what he does offensively.
All right. So, obviously, I'm going with my guys, Judge. And you know, I'm not going to let him be the only one.
Let's do it.
Oh, this feels nostalgic right here.
Protocol with Judge.
Can we get you out of here before you get hurt?
I just get excited when I put a helmet on.
I know, right? It's not too late.
You get football players helmet, this is what happens.
How do you think? Feel okay by your first day?
I was pretty scared, but I feel great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Come back soon. Thank you. We hope you'll come back. Victor, you can come back. You guys come back. You've got like 15 minutes. It's been a day. We're getting ready for championship weekend. The jump is next. Anything else? Famous last word. Here's your chance.
All
right, right. You have the national.
Just don't hit me.
No.
I love you.
Matt Castle, everybody.